Hi, I'm John Weber. This is Piano Jazz. Our guest today is a visionary composer, a musical storyteller, an extraordinary jazz pianist, film score, and a very bright young rising star in the jazz world, Roman Collin. Roman, welcome to Piano Jazz.
Thanks, John. Hi.
And you are from Antibes.
I am from Antibes, which is located in the south of France. It's on the Riviera, right between Cannes and Nice. It's nice. It's nice and sunny.
So now I have another reason to be jealous of you. In addition to your stellar piano playing, your first album as a leader, titled The Rise and Fall of Pipo Kuhn, features 8 marvelously crafted compositions.
Thank you.
Each track feels like a vignette.
I'm glad you're saying that, because that was definitely the goal. I mean, when I had to do a debut record, I felt that I wanted to write pieces that were very representative of certain episodes in my life. And I feel that when I write music, I think that if I can dedicate a piece of music to a very specific time of my life or a certain type of emotion that I have, then it actually allows me to focus and crystallize this one emotion or event. And that also helps having the music be focused and have a theme be more condensed, and that way not to start writing 10 different pieces at once, you know?
Yeah, it does feel like part of a suite. Each piece that I listened to was part of a suite, and I'm going to presume that Pipo Kuhn is the story's hero. Our protagonist is you.
It is.
Okay, that would be correct. Mm-hmm. And Pipo Kuhn experiences 8 distinct events.
That's right.
Told as musical stories by you. And I need to ask you, did you compose each vignette as they happened, or did you recently pen them sort of as a reflection of events which occurred over a number of years?
No, it's basically the whole record is like a musical illustration of the past 10 years of my life. So it's kind of a retrospective reflection on those years and specific events that happened during those years. I'm not going to get too specific in terms of what exactly happened. I want to kind of leave it open to the listener's imagination, and I think the titles are pretty self-explanatory.
You do that very well. I mean, you do paint very descriptive musical portraits of all the places and events that happen. I purposely did not look at titles for a while because I thought, mm-hmm. I wonder what this says, because you do manage to convey what you are feeling, what's going on inside your heart and your head, and you do play it extremely well. So from the wonderful compendium of 8 incisive musical stories on your recording, The Rise and Fall of Pipo Kuhn, I would like to hear you play the second of 8 vignettes titled Maui, Hawaii.
I'd love to.
I was admiring your dynamics, and I know the song is Maui, Hawaii, and it feels... I've never been to Maui. Have you been to Maui?
Yes, I actually have. Yeah, yeah. I spent about a week over there.
Okay, see, it's a place I've never been there, but I associate it with maximum fun, minimum responsibility. Unless, of course, I have a gig there, in which case I'm...
I didn't, so that was good for me, too. Yeah, yeah, no, it's a beautiful place, absolutely.
Obviously, you know how to compose, you know themes, you know, you understand it very well, mm-hmm. and you know how to take Maui, Hawaii and turn it into a piece that feels like sun and surf and sand and everything, and I'm feeling it all. So,
thank you. That's a beautiful thing.
I can think of another child prodigy who once performed with the Chicago Symphony when he was 11, and it's somebody you've met, Herbie Hancock.
Oh, yeah. I first met Herbie when I auditioned to get into the Thelonious Monk Institute of Jazz. So what happened is I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston for a few years. And then after that, one of my teachers at Berklee, Hal Crook, suggested that I take an audition to get to try to get in the Monk Institute. That's a master's program. It's a 2-year program. It's very peculiar in the sense that it's the chairman is Herbie Hancock, and the artistic director is Terence Blanchard. And it's a very, very, very peculiar program in the sense that basically Herbie puts together one band every 2 years. So they audition about, I'd say, 3 rhythm sections and a bunch of horns, and they flew us out to L.A. That's where he was based back then. And then I took an audition in front of, it was Herbie, Wayne Shorter, and Terence Blanchard. And so we took a live audition, and then... they make the calls and they put together that one band. In my case, it was a septet. We had 3 horns and a rhythm section and a vibes player. And that one band is basically put in this rehearsal room for just about 2 years, where we play together every day. We don't have any formal classes, but we have jazz masters who come in almost every week, and they basically work us real hard for about 5-6 hours a day, every day. And so it's an amazing opportunity,
I heard some of those recordings online on your website, as a matter of fact. I heard that septet playing amazing stuff. And you're playing keyboards and piano and beautiful arrangements. Really amazing group. I think what I like is Wayne Shorter, Terence Blanchard, Herbie Hancock, they're all guys who work extensively in film. I mean, I heard Wayne do a really nice job on Glengarry Glen Ross back about 1992, that David Mamet film. Yeah. And Terrence has scored probably what, 30 films.
Yeah, Terrence is really big on movies, definitely. All the Spike Lee movies.
Right. And Oscar winner Herbie Hancock.
Yeah, absolutely.
Around Midnight,
yeah.
Yeah. And there's a real cinematic quality in your playing and writing, I notice, on your album and just playing for right now. I watched a film that you scored.
Oh, yeah, a short movie, yeah, about me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you possess a very natural affinity for film composition. I mean, after listening to your work at Berklee, obviously, I mean, you know your way around the electronic gear, which is helpful in the film biz these days. I mean, suppose Tim Burton calls, hey.
I mean, I would really love to be given more of an opportunity to write for movies, absolutely. It's music to me is, might be a cliche a little bit, but it is, to me, music is the soundtrack of life, and I feel that my favorite music is the soundtrack of my life. And so I guess that's why, that's what comes through in my writing, in my compositions, because that's what, people tell me that. I get that very, very often, that people feel that my music is written or could fit like movies very, very well.
I agree.
Yeah.
And
that's also why, on my first record, I did a pretty thick booklet, where I have vignettes, little illustrations, that go along with every piece. And that, to me, the visual aspect is extremely important. I'm actually planning on working on that more for my next record. I'm working on the next record now. I think I'll boost the visual aspect a little more, see what happens there.
I love those. And that's another reason to get the hard copy over the download. You wrote a piece which reminds me of Rachmaninoff's F minor prelude, that thunderstorm one. F minor is always the thunderstorm key.
Yeah.
And it was from his Opus 23, I want to say, titled The Calling. And
yes.
It has got film score written all over it. I would actually like to hear you play that, if you would.
Absolutely, yes. Thank you.
You know, Roman, sometimes your soloing is so focused and compositional, it sounds and feels meditative, you know, like a peaceful warrior moment. Yeah, you find this zone and you take all of us with you, and you must have some sort of meditation regimen. How do you focus and get into that zone?
Thanks for saying that. I mean, that to me is probably the single most important thing in music, you know, beyond the notes we play and the knowledge we all have and the chops and all this. I think being able to actually create an emotional musical moment is the single most important thing. That's the one thing that projects and hopefully will take the audience with us as musicians, you know. I have practiced meditation and yoga since I was, I think, 16 or so. And I think I always look for that zone of focus and peace and that zone of infinity, I think, an absolute, where nothing really moves and everything moves at the same time. And it's like being in the eye of the hurricane a little bit, you know.
Tell me if I'm barking up the right tree on this one. Regarding your title track, The Rise and Fall of People Kun, mm-hmm. the eighth of eight chapters, it sounds like a guy who's, you know, been there, done that. It's the end of the day, and he's had some ups and downs. Life's pretty good. That's the vibe I get from it. Tell me if that's accurate.
Well, that's interesting. That's definitely the vibe. I mean, it's the title track of the record. It's also the last title on the record. It's definitely a feeling of having arrived at the end of a journey, a long journey that can be painful, but that's also a great exploration of the self and of life in general. And it definitely has this sense of peace, maybe nostalgia as well, because that's the end. And it's actually interesting because it's a piece that different people have different. Some see it as very nostalgic, and some see it as very peaceful. And I think there's a little bit of both in it, you know.
I sense that. It makes me happy. You know, I mean, Duke Ellington was right on target when he said there's only two kinds of music, good and the other kind.
Mm-hmm.
And this is good. What you do is good. And
thank you.
I would like to hear you play the title track from your album, The Rise and Fall of People Kun.
Sure.
To hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast, tune in next week to your NPR station. Log on to pianojazz.npr.org to find a station in your area. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the National Endowment for the Arts, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR.